Okay. The title of our workshop is Defeating Depression, and we're going to be looking at four different approaches to depressive disorders: psychotherapy, psychopharmacology, phytochemistry, and psychoanalysis. And we were joking earlier that instead of using the word phytochemistry, maybe we should have said herbal medicine, because that's what we meant, but we wanted something that would sort of be alliterative. And we got it, along with all of you. So we're going to begin by looking at Jung and Jung's views on depression, and then we're going to be distinguishing between analytical and clinical depression and look a little bit at the analytic view of depression. First of all, when we look at anything Jungian, especially what Jung has written on depression, it's always important to remember that Jungians, and Jung especially, tend not to pathologize anything. This stems from the origin of Jung's work with schizophrenic patients, psychotic patients, in the hospital that he worked in. And this is one of the major differences between the work of Jung and the work of Freud. So Jungians tend not to pathologize anything, and especially something like depression. And this is a double-edged sword, because, of course, in common parlance, depression is a pathological condition. It's considered a psychopathology. And it's very interesting as I'm sure I know all of you are professionals or have been around the psychological world, especially the Jungian world, for quite some time. But, I'll participate in group discussions with other professionals who are not Jungian. And I have been called on a number of times, especially for using the term depression and not fully owning the negative or pathological implications of that term. And I have to plead guilty to that. That as Jungians, we look at depression in a particular way. We look at depression as the loss of libido, the libido slipping into the unconscious, for the purpose of reforming and reconstructing aspects of the unconscious, only to be represented later. Now, that's all well and good. But when we live in a culture that tends to pathologize depression, and when, every ad that you see is all about being bright and chipper, depression takes on a little bit of a different twist in common usage. So I think we have to be very careful when we look at what Jung does with the phenomenon of depression and not absolutize that as the way depression needs to be handled clinically or in our personal lives. And that's one of the things that we want to rectify with this workshop, because we are going to be looking at what the DSM-IV has to say about depression and really the biochemistry underlying depression. But probably the most representative quote from Jung about depression comes from Volume 5, which in the Volume 5 in the collected works, which is called Symbols of Transformation. This book originally was called Psychology of the Unconscious, and it was the publication of this book that led to the complete split between Jung and Freud. So this book is extremely important historically, because it was with this book that Jung came out with his libido theory. And his libido theory, as you know, differed from Freud's in that Jung felt libido was content-free. For Freud, libido was sexual in nature. And Jung felt that, no, that wasn't true. Libido could take on sexual forms, but it could also be religious, it could be artistic, it could be scientific. Libido was just basically psychic energy. So that's what this book did for the field of psychoanalysis and analytical psychology. It caused a rift that never really was healed. In this book, Jung discusses several different cases, and in particular, he talks about a situation, and this situation has to do with depression, and this is what he writes. The separation from youth has even taken away the golden glamour of nature, and the future appears hopeless and empty. So the situation is one of depression. But what robs nature of its glamour and life of its joy is the habit of looking back for something that used to be outside, instead of looking inside into the depths of the depressive state. So Jung is looking at the depressive state as Jung looks at every symptom as containing the seeds of healing. So when we're faced with depression, which is the separation from the golden time and being brought into a time not so golden, but leaden, what happens is we are tending to look back, look outside of ourselves for something that used to be there, but what now has to be found within. This looking back, Jung says, leads to regression and is the first step along the path of healing the depression. Regression is also an involuntary introversion insofar as the past is an object of memory and therefore a psychic content, an endopsychic factor. It is a relapse into the past caused by a depression in the present. And here's the loaded sentence. Depression should therefore be regarded as an unconscious compensation whose content must be made conscious if it is to be fully effective. Depression is an unconscious compensation for a feeling of loss in the present. That's, so far, traditional psychoanalytic teaching. But it's the content of the depression must be made conscious if it is to be fully effective. How do we do that, we ask Jung. Jung says, this can only be done by consciously regressing along with the depressive tendency and integrating the memories so activated into the conscious mind, which was what the depression was aiming at in the first place. This is a distinctly Jungian approach to treating depression, and with what we know now about depression and the biochemistry of depression, is extremely dangerous if this is the way we practice solely. Because what this implies is that a way out of depression is to go into the depression. And of course, basic to this teaching of Jung is the idea that when you move very, very strongly in any one direction, you can precipitate what Jung calls an enantiodromia, a turning into the opposite. So if we go in the direction of the depression, it's very homeopathic as well, the depression will eventually lift and bring us the opposite. Theoretically, this is sound. And if we're dealing with what we call analytic depression, this is probably a good way to practice. But we have to distinguish between clinical depression, which has a biochemical substrate, and well, all depression does, but clinical depression is very strongly biochemical in nature and needs other supportive types of therapy. Once the supportive types of therapy are in place and the bottom is raised on the depression then becomes what we call analytic depression and is well treated using this method. But it requires a supportive environment within the therapeutic container and a supportive environment in the use of alternative or supportive therapies, one of which is psychopharmacology. Yeah.
Yes, I was going to add a couple of comments. So what you had described, Carl Jung's definition of depression, if that word depression had not been in there and you had substituted it with some other word and had read it to the current DSM-IV clinical psychiatrist, they would not define that as depression. What we're going to talk about in the DSM-IV, what they call a clinical depression, has nothing really to do with an analytical depression, which means, of course, that you can have both at the same time, one without the other. And the other comment I wanted to say is that one of the luxuries in the good old days of Jung is that one of the ways that he could get into that depression was that if a person got severely regressed, suicidal, catatonic, or what have you, he had the luxury of putting a person in a hospital for weeks, if not months, at a time, because it was a safe, secure, monitored environment, and you could get a person as regressed as possible in the analytical depression, and they would eventually come out of it. Unfortunately, in this day and age, with DRGs, HMOs, and the expense of medical care, we often don't have the luxury of getting into the severe analytical depression as much as we want.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point also that somehow the socio-political system and the economic system can dictate treatment. Before we go into looking at the three major ways that psychoanalysis looks at depression, I want to point out, as in so many other areas of Jungian thought, Jung writes what he writes, and we read it dutifully because we're good Jungians, but the meaning of what Jung says about depression is distilled, here again, as so many other Jungian topics, by a woman who studied with him. In my opinion, the definitive work that we need to read if we want to understand a Jungian approach to depression is by Esther Harding, and it's called The Value and Meaning of Depression. Oops. I'm sure that if this isn't available in the bookstore, it's easy to obtain. It's 31 pages, and it is not new, was copywritten 1970, but it is the best exposition of the way Jungians think about depression that you can possibly find, and well worth reading. It basically, the idea is that in depression, the libido falls into the unconscious to do its work and will reemerge through the transcendent function with images and synchronicities that move the person into the new phase of their life.